Lord Vader, Operation Andor is underway.
Excellent. If we release 3 episodes per week, the Lorehounds will never be able to cover every episode. The Imperial forces will crush the rebellion before it begins.
Stand by. We're picking up something on our scanners.
Echo Squadron, reporting in.
Delta Squadron, on your left.
Django Squadron, on your 6.
With Imperial forces coming in fast, we're calling all Rebels to join the fight this season. Starting after the April 22nd premiere, you'll hear 3 full breakdowns for each week's episodes of Andor Season 2. Each podcast will be led by one of our squadron leaders, Alicia, David, and John. We'll be bringing in new and familiar voices to fill out the roster. Search for the Lorehounds on any podcast platform to join us in a galaxy far, far away. And don't forget to check out our season pass for even more content like our Holocron bonus pods. It's good news for anyone, except Darth Vader.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome to Silmarillion Stories, where the Lorehounds, your guides to Tolkien's world of Middle-earth. I'm David.
I'm John, and this is our podcast for Of Thingol and Melian, the 6th story of the Silmarillion.
In this episode, we're going to be discussing the union of Maia and Elf and the abandonment of Thingol and the origins of the Sindar.
Before we get started, here's a quick reminder that you can send feedback to lotr@thelorehounds.com, and we'll get to those questions in the next episode. Episodes are released once per month towards the end of the month.
If you're enjoying our coverage of the Silmarillion or any of the other shows that we're covering and you'd like to support us directly, head over to patreon.com/thelorehounds and subscribe today for early and ad-free access to all of our episodes. You can always find our ad-supported episodes on our public feed. Just search for Lorehounds in your podcast application of choice.
One more quick ask. Please take a moment and rate the podcast or leave a review if you feel moved. Ratings and reviews really help other people find our podcast, which helps us make more podcasts. Now, before we get going, I just want to talk about our guest. We have a guest, Mary Clay, from That's What I'm Talking About. And she had us on a couple months ago to talk about the Lord of the Rings appendices. So you can check that out on her feed, which you can find in our show notes. She's really great. She did a whole podcast where she went through all the Tolkien stuff, piece by piece. She started with the Lord of the Rings, I think, and she went through the Silmarillion. She's done a ton of this stuff. She has a couple hundred episodes now. And so if you want more Tolkien, definitely check out her feed. I had a really great time talking with her. We've already recorded it. David, I'm sure you also had a good time talking to her.
Yeah, having a chat with MC is always a good time. She is a fun person to podcast with and has a good take on all things Tolkien because, you know, she's coming to it fresh. This is her first read-throughs and she recorded her whole journey. And I think that's a very cool project. It takes a lot of effort, not only to do, but also some bravery to get out there and put yourself in front of something that you haven't experienced before and share that with folks. So, yeah, it's a good time.
Absolutely. Well, here's our conversation with Mary Clay now. Welcome, everyone, to our main breakdown of the Thingol and Melian chapter. With us today is Mary Clay, host of That's What I'm Talking About. Mary Clay, how you doing today?
Hey, I'm great. Thanks for inviting me in to talk about, I'm revisiting the Silmarillion after finally finishing it. So thanks for bringing it back into my life.
I can't tell if you are, I can't tell if this is a good or a bad thing.
I definitely had to, when I was rereading this part, I had to remind myself, oh yeah, this is what it's like reading the Silmarillion. You really have to focus in on it. I was like, oh, it's just a page. I can leave the TV on in the background, but nope, No, I had to, it took a while to get my brain back into this place.
Right.
So one way or another, I'm back in it now.
Well, we're glad you could make it over. We had such a fun time on your podcast. Just a quick shout out to your own podcast, if you want to let people know, and then we can talk a little bit about more at the end of the episode, because you're going to stick around through feedback with us, and then you can we can plug your episode again then, or your episode, I'm sorry, your podcast. But if you just want to give people quick deets, that would be great.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, is my podcast. I've been doing it for almost 4 years now. Four years, I think. And I think that's how time works these days. It covers my experience of Lord of the Rings and Tolkien for the first time. I started by reading Lord of the Rings, having never seen the movies or remembering any of the plot lines or anything like that. And then kind of went from there and went into The Hobbit and The Hobbit movies, some other fun, obscure Tolkien adaptations, and as well as The Silmarillion. So I started the podcast knowing absolutely nothing, and felt really bad when I would have guests on and they would be like, well, we'd love to have you on our show, but we're gonna spoil everything, so you can't come on. So it's fun to be at a point where I can talk about this stuff with other people and know what I'm talking about.
Awesome. Great.
Right. Well, you picked a fun chapter to come in on. This is a pretty short one. It's only about, I think you said in our upcoming, in our intro banter, it's only about a page and a half. In my edition, it's the same. David, I don't know about you, but it is certainly not something that you need to spend a week reading, although you could, because it's J.R.R. Tolkien and he's a beast.
I actually was out for a walk and I was like, okay, let me listen to my Audible of the chapter to like prime my brain. And then it was over, and I was like, wait, what is this? Yeah, exactly. And then when I looked in the book, I was like, oh, that's why. That's why it went straight to chapter 5.
Yeah, it's a strange one, because all of these chapters are super long-winded, and perhaps this is still long-winded, because he basically just takes a meet cute and turns it into two pages instead of a line. But it covers so little compared to most of the other chapters of the Silmarillion. So before we give our general thoughts, why don't I read a quick chapter synopsis? Melian, one of the Maiar, heard of the coming of the elves and decided to spend some time in the forests of Beleriand. At the same time, Elway, king of the Teleri, was in Beleriand with his people when he took a walk in the woods. He heard nightingales and followed them to Melian, and the two immediately fell in love. They stare at each other, quote, well, long years are measured. And the Teleri, unable to find their leader, appoint Olwë, Elwë's brother, as their new king. Elwë takes the name Elu Thingol, or King Grangmantle, and establishes the kingdom of Doriath with his queen, Melian, in the caves of Menegroth. Because of their leaders, the Teleri who remain with them become the Sindar, or Grey Elves. It is from Thingol and Melian's line that the fairest of all the children of Iluvatar will come. Oof. So, it's funny, when I went to go summarize this, I was like, wow, it's short, it's going to be two sentences. Turned out to be a full, long paragraph, because there's just so many good details, chock full of them in this chapter. Mary Clay, you're our guest here. Why don't you give us your impressions first?
Well, as a woman reading Tolkien, it's great to see a woman character. was one of the things that I was kind of told going into the Silmarillion. I made lots of fun of Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, which has no women at all, except for Lobelia Saxville Baggins, if you want to count her, her brief little like cameo. But yeah, I made lots of fun of the lack of women, and lots of people said, well, there's plenty of female characters in the Silmarillion, so it was great to start learning about them. So hearing about Melian for the first time is really cool. She's so ethereal. She's being compared to Yavanna herself. And I was like, she's going to be a really cool woman. And later on in the Silmarillion, I won't say what else, but spoiler alert, she does have some pretty great moments coming up.
Yep. She certainly does a lot for the elves. I'll say it that way. She does quite a lot. David, what was your impression of this chapter?
Well, like I mentioned earlier, it was so short that I was caught surprised. I then, you know, listened to it a couple of times more, read it a couple of times more. And since this is my first time reading through the Silmarillion, I was a little confused. It was a bit of a head scratcher to me. And as I was looking at some of the details, I was just wondering, is this a whole bunch of seeding and table setting and, you know, putting certain people in certain places and referencing certain, you know, map locations and things like that? So I really, beyond that, I did not have a lot to react to, I guess I could say.
Sure. Yeah, not a lot of big events in this chapter.
Zero, yeah.
I think this is more of a, Tolkien wants them to stare at each other for many long years.
Mm-hmm.
And he just wants us to appreciate that they're super duper in love. Tolkien, as much as he shows rather than tells, does like to tell us how much people are in love.
I mean, nothing says love like stumbling through the woods and hearing a voice in the distance and then being frozen in time for years to come.
Millennia. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. And then just abandoning your people for
yes,
no reason.
Yeah. This guy, what's his name? Elway has never heard of the phrase bros before hoes.
No.
He abandons his brother and all of his people for this woman.
Very true. So now that we've done our general thoughts and our synopsis, I think let's take a few points that are part of this chapter and let's discuss them. So first of all, let's just talk about who people are. Again, this is a podcast that is geared towards walking you through your first time in the Silmarillion or reminding you of what was there when you read it the first time. So Melian, who we've discussed, is a Maia. She's one of the lesser Ainur or lesser holy beings. And then her new husband or partner, Elway / Thingol, is one of the kings of the elves who originally traveled to Valinor to see the trees. So remember, we discussed the elves going all the way to Valinor with ambassadors so that they could tell whether this was going to be a good idea to bring the whole group of elves all the way to Valinor to live with the Valar rather than living in Middle Earth.
So my big question is this the first and or only Maia pairing that we have, period? Like, do the Maia get down with anybody else, or is this it? This is the one.
I believe this is the one.
Okay. I guess, yeah, this would be the first, yeah.
Yeah.
And it doesn't...
I think it's the first and only.
Okay, right.
Am I wrong, Mary Clay?
You know, I can't claim to know all about the relationships of the Maia and other species of people, but I don't recall any other major relationships that are pointed out. The ones that are really focused on later on are between, you know, elf and man.
Yeah.
But right. Yeah, I think they're the only one of Maia and elf.
So that's
right. I think you're right.
Yeah, that's pretty unique that a Maia is gonna go, you know, go that way. I mean, what, and the Maia that we have, it's like Gandalf, Saruman, the Blue Wizards, it's those folks. Right. And this is the only, is this the only female or, you know, woman representation of a Maia, a feminine Maia?
No, I don't think so. I believe okay. There are others, but I would have to go back and get you a list. Okay. I could not name
yeah,
them
it's
off the top
my,
of my head.
It's my understanding that there are a lot of Maia.
Right.
And
right,
sometimes right. They're just called out and named. And that I interpreted them as being kind of like servants or like a sidekick to the Valar.
Right.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
they're not fully Valar, but they're, you know, a step above the elves as well. So I'm pretty sure there are a lot more of the Maia because Sauron is also a Maia who gets corrupted. So there's definitely more of these guys to come.
And I think Ungoliant is probably one of the Maia, although she is not definitively named. One of the Maiar. Okay. Ungoliant, the giant spider.
Yeah, she's just kind of like this void of mystery, being like, you decide.
Right.
Where did she come from?
Yeah.
Who is she?
Yeah. Best guess, I think, is one of the Maiar, but we don't have definitive. I think she's supposed to be mysterious for effect's sake.
Yeah.
Though, what I think is interesting is by the end, you find out that this is where the fairest of all the children of Iluvatar come. And I think that that emphasizes that this is the only union of Maiar and Elf, because, you know, that strain of holiness, that strain of holy being blood or heritage, is what makes Luthien so beautiful, is what makes Arwen so beautiful, is what makes these fair elves that are so unique within Middle-earth.
Right. That would make sense. And I can't help anytime that Tolkien goes into these deeper descriptions or setups where there is this powerful love interest between two beings, and not think about him and his spouse and the relationship that they had. And I don't wonder, I mean, obviously Beren and Luthien is the model that we all know, and it's on their gravestone and all that good stuff. But that if Tolkien didn't experience something like Elwë did when, you know, when he first lays eyes on her and, you know, hears her singing, if that's not some kind of enchantment that he also experienced in his real life.
Well, every single, you know, major love story that we, you know, that we cherish in Middle-earth.
Yeah.
I guess the three big ones, which are, you know, Melian and Thingol, Beren and Luthien, and Aragorn and Arwen, they all involve a forbidden love.
Yes.
In which the woman is older than the man. Who does that sound
there
like?
There you go.
Right? It's J.R.R. and Edith.
Yep.
Yeah, definitely putting touches of, like he did in so many other aspects of his works, putting those personal touches of his life into it. And I think it kind of, on one hand, the way that this story unfolds, it can be described, if you take it in a certain context, it can be very creepy of like, all of a sudden I had no... control over my own thoughts and body, and I was frozen there as this spell came upon right. me. And like, you could very easily, you know, reframe this as like a witch kidnapping a man and putting a love spell on him, you know?
Right.
So, the fact that he's taking this like real life thing is making it a little bit more wholesome and being like, this is what I feel like actually happened to me when I met my wife. I felt like I was overcome by a spell or a trance or something, and I found it to be really beautiful and writing from the heart.
You brought in exactly what I was going to talk about, which is the word enchanted. Uh-huh. That's such a strange choice to our modern ears, and I wonder what Tolkien would have told us that it actually means in like pure Middle English. He's like, oh, chant. It's about the chant of the soul that really, he would have some kind of explanation where it has nothing to do with magic at all. That it would be that's just, you know, no, they just were enamored with each other. It's the same word.
And, you know, MC, you were, the word you just used, wholesome. I can't think of any of the love relationships in Tolkien that aren't wholesome. They're not dirty, you know, they're not lustful, they're not...
Call me when you get to Arathel and Eol.
Okay, all right.
Oh, yeah, okay, all right. Now you're talking.
But by and large, there's a lot of wholesome love going down.
That doesn't seem to be, that's definitely, it's not a focus of his where, I think there are some aspects where like that, you know, darkness comes into play in so many parts of what he writes about.
Right.
And I think you can make a case for instances where darkness comes into the love stories, but I do, yeah, by and large, it doesn't, that's not what he is going for. He's going for all these stories of people who really deserve each other and falling and, you know, finding their soulmate or their other half Question for y'all. Maybe it's a loaded question, but do y'all believe in this concept of soulmates? Because I think a lot of what Tolkien writes, it feels like he's, you know, it feels like Arwen and Aragorn and Beren and Luthien and Thangol and Melian are written to be, you know, soulmates. And a lot of people would say soulmates don't exist, you know?
I guess that would presuppose your sort of spiritual beliefs and values. And if there is something beyond just simple biology, soulmates would require, I think by necessity, that concept means that you've got to have some belief in a spiritual realm beyond atoms and molecules and, you know, physiobiology and chemical cascades in our brains. So it goes to that kind of question. I personally, you know, still, you know, having ideas of romance and having, you know, fulfilling relationships, I don't really go in for the soulmate thing. Like there's a one person that I'm destined for and that they're destined for me. I probably have thought that at times in my life, and I don't ever know that it ever really worked out. And I think the relationship that I have now with my spouse, one of the reasons why it works well for both of us is that we're both practical people and kind of have our feet on the ground. And rather than being, enraptured by our, enchanted by our relationship to each other. So that's my take, but that's as a plus 50-year-old man. So, you know, that take that for what it's worth. John, I don't know. Are you a soulful person when it comes to love and romance?
I don't know. I have complicated thoughts on the non-physical personhood. I shift with the wind. But my wife will not get me in trouble with this because she actually explicitly rejects the idea of soulmates. And I think I've come around to her way of thinking on it in the sense that we can love each other and we don't have to be forced to be with each other, right? We've chosen to work to make our relationship work, to
active choice,
right? And it's, I almost feel like calling yourselves soulmates takes away from the obligation that you have as a couple to work to make sure that my continuously changing self works with your continuously changing self.
Yep.
And
I like all that
because we're just always changing. We're doing a Wizard of Earthsea where we're doing your true name is how somebody controls you. That's like the big thing in a Wizard of Earthsea. And I don't know. I actually took issue with the idea of a true name because I just feel like you 10 years from now is not going to be you now. And so my point is, and I'm now going too long-winded on this, is that
I'm the one that brought this up. So
I think it's a good concept. Is that I do not think that I probably align with the professor on his idea of soulmates.
Right.
I think it's
Mary Clegg?
Yeah, I think it's a very romantic view of life, and Tolkien himself seemed to be quite the romantic person. So. Yes. I guess it's also, it seems very fitting for a fantasy world that you can just be walking in a forest and hear a voice and decide and go, that's the woman I'm meant to be with.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And don't we go to our fantasy for that, right? To escape reality in some way.
Yeah.
I don't remember the exact story of how he met Edith, but I know it was at this house that they were both staying at because, you know, he was orphaned and she was staying in this house as well. And she was a musician, right? Like she was a pianist and he probably met her while she was at least trying to play the piano. I know she had some issues of getting access to the piano in that house, but music is, I think, the original thing that lured him to her. Of course he's going to write that with the Nightingales with this story, right? I think that there's traces of Tolkien's life just plastered all over this story.
Yeah, 100%.
So the next concept I wanted to talk about is the trammels and chain of the flesh of Arda. I think I reversed that. The chain and trammels of the flesh of Arda, which is this concept that's brought into play later in the Silmarillion, but I'm going to cheat and I'm going to take it in here because I think it's a cool way to frame this. And we talked about this, if you'll recall, if you've been with us a long time, and you stayed with us for Rings of Power, when Sauron is, you know, trying to get Galadriel to be with him, that, we said, was a big deal, because there's this concept of the things that happen to a holy being, the things that happen to one of the Maiar when they decide to settle down with an elf, when they decide to partake in sort of the day-to-day life of an elf and one of the children of Iluvatar. So here's a quote from later in the Silmarillion. "For Melian was of the divine race of the Valar, and she was a Maia of great power and wisdom. But for love of Elwë Singolo, she took upon herself the form of the elder children of Iluvatar. And in that union, she became bound by the chain and trammels of the flesh of Arda." So the idea is that the more she's married to, you know, the more she's bound to Thingol, the more she helps him, the more she, you know, makes children with him, the more she becomes tied to the form of an elf. She's still one of the Maiar, but she's giving up a part of herself. She's giving up the sort of ethereal part of herself to be part of this union. And I think that that's both beautiful and horrifying, right? Like, she's giving up a huge part of herself to be part of this union, but she's doing it because she just loves him so much. And not even just him, but I think that over time, she starts to love the elves so much. Mm-hmm. You have to remember that she came to Beleriand because she heard the elves were here. It wasn't on a whim. She really wanted to be with these children.
Yeah, and I think, as well as growing to really connect with and love the elves that she is, you know, amongst now, I think she's also growing to love, because they established the kingdom of Doriath together. So she's also learning to love the, you know, even just like the physical earth and the like home that they have built, the physical home that they have built together, and the, you know, the things that they have done together and accomplishments and achievements and setbacks that they have done as, you know, the king and queen, and all of that becomes intertwined, and, you know, it can kind of turn into like a It's a Wonderful Life situation, where you look back and it's like, you know, if I never went to Middle Earth, became a Maia, I mean, a reverse of that, if I never came to Middle Earth and became an elf and joined this, look at all of the joys and heartbreaks of life that I would have missed out on, and the things that would have, you know, changed in domino effect because of all of that. And yeah, it's also, you know, hard to think about what she would have given up, but I think also it's worth noting that she would have had a long time to live, you know, in Valinor amongst the Valar, enjoy that, and then decide, you know what, maybe I'll go to Middle Earth for a change of pace.
Right. That's true. And even after things go down, let's say everything goes bad. We won't spoil if it does or not, but let's say everything goes bad. They're still both going to Valinor, right? Like, they're both part of the Eternal Arda.
Yeah, worth saying, it says in this, and I remember being really hung up on this line the first time I was reading it through, where it says, Elwë never again across the sea to Valinor so long as he lived, and Melian returned not thither while their realm together lasted. And I was like, what does that mean? Their realm together their realm lasted. Interesting.
They're not hiding the ball. Not hiding the ball too much.
Tolkien does that. He loves doing that. Those like bits of foreshadowing that as you're reading it, you're like, that means nothing to me. Why would you write that means nothing to me, and all you've done is perked up my suspicions to be like, what happens to them?
But I mean, super rewarding on the second and third read, right? It's the book that keeps on giving, I think. Yes. I think every time I read it, I like it more, because the first time it's sort of like, oh my God, what's happening? You know, you're just trying to get your bearings. You're trying to not drown in this material. And then you sort of, the second time, I think you get the plot, right? And you can get a few more details. I would say the third time is where I started to become emotional with these characters, right? Where I could sort of start bonding with them. And it's tough to read a book like that, because that's not what we're trained to do with books. We're trained to have these, you know, grand adventures, you know, in modern fantasy, where you just open up the book, you're right in, you got the characters laid out for you. If you don't have the characters laid out for you, it's not selling. And it's super interesting to go back to this work that is really challenging. It is challenging you as a reader, I think. And, you know, I know a lot of people are going to be turned off by that, but I think that when they persevere, it's not for everyone, but if you persevere, it's really something that really keeps on giving.
Agreed. Ditto.
Question about the chains and trammels. Didn't we see, and I think we talked about this before, especially with Saruman, right? He started tasting power and having control and dominion, that corruption, even though he was a holy being, he was still ensconced in a flesh of a, sure. of a, you know, yep. Of a man, of the race of men. And so he fell victim to those inbuilt weaknesses, I guess you could say, or I don't want to call it a weakness necessarily if it's a feature, not a bug, but he fell into something where he did not have, he was no longer holy and above the daily circumstances of life and the feelings of hunger and pain and of drowsiness and, you know, excitement and all the different experiences mm-hmm. that we go through as mortal beings. And so,
well,
yeah, go.
Saruman is a little bit of a different case, because the Istari, which is, you know, the race of wizards that you know, that Saruman was part of, they right. are Maiar.
Right.
But they were given from the start of their time in Middle-earth, they were given from the start physical bodies
right.
that had the weaknesses of men immediately.
Right.
They could be killed. They could be turned to evil. They could be hungry. They could be tired. It's not like he was at Melian state, whereas Melian was at her full, you know, full Maiar-ness. Power. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Maiar-ness. Okay.
Yeah, I like it. But yeah, so it's a little bit different.
Okay.
But yes, I think that he did succumb to those weaknesses, mm-hmm. which is why he was forsaken the sort of blessing of the Valar eventually and cast from his position.
Right. Whereas Melian is, as you say, she's at the height of her Melian-ness, and she's with paired up with an elf in the early days in a sort of Eden like state, you know, maybe Melkor hasn't, you know, ruptured the land down in this area.
He's gone everywhere pretty much from now, but
okay.
But they will establish, I think, you know, I'll say this point now is, you know, the Caves of Menegroth is where we're going.
Right.
And these are these hidden elvish kingdoms that are going to start popping up throughout the next few stories that I think you got to keep an eye on, because those are going to be these big hubs of elves during the First Age.
Okay.
And the rise of them, who knows if they'll fall, although we do know that Beleriand doesn't exist in the Third Age or the Second Age, the rise of them and perhaps fall of them are a huge part of the major arc of the Silmarillion. So we did touch on this before, but Thingol doesn't even leave a note, right? What did we learn from Arrested Development? You always leave a note.
Yes!
And he doesn't even leave a note for his people. They have to figure out that he's gone. How long do you think they searched?
I mean, it says that they were, before it even mentions, it brings the Teleri back into the story. It says that he and Melian were frozen there for years. So years definitely have passed, so the Teleri were certainly not in a rush to get to Valinor. And I guess the question of, like, do people go missing? I take that back, because these elves
they do go
have
missing.
Experienced some yeah. of their own kind just disappearing and going missing. So maybe that's what they thought happened, you know? Maybe they
Although,
were like, oh, someone got him.
The only thing I'll say about that is I don't know if you're fully into the context of where we are in the Silmarillion right now, but this is while Melkor is in Valinor, captured and in chains.
Okay.
So, but you know what? Actually, I'm going to give you points back because Sauron's still around, orcs are still around, could still happen. Let's just say it's possible.
But yeah, they really do not seem nervous for quite some time, no. Which just puts into scale the lives of the elves. Something that I just keep going back to, you know, say what you will, whatever people's opinions are about the Rings of Power show. I think they did a really fantastic job with Prince Durin, the dwarf. His mm-hmm. character is fantastic. Yep. And he has this scene with Elrond where Elrond seems to not care that he hasn't shown up to hang out with Durin in a while. And Durin's like, I've gotten married, I've had children, mm-hmm. and you haven't bothered to come in and say hello. And that really puts it into reference for how the elves view, you know, their lives compared to other lives. And so a year, several years is nothing. So they're perfectly fine to just hang out, relax, you know, sing some campfire songs before finally always like, maybe I should go look for my brother.
Yeah.
And I think it also says that a darkness comes around Melian and Elway as they are standing there staring at each other. So they, even when they go out looking for them, they can't even see them or find them.
Yeah, they are certainly hidden away.
Also, I don't know, I guess just one more thing to add that I just thought of, this image that it creates of them kind of being there frozen in time together and they're surrounded by darkness. It could also be said that when you first fall in love, sometimes it can feel like you are in your own world with just this other person.
Yeah.
And no other person exists except for them.
Right.
And this seems to be a very, you know, literal instance of that. And he forgets about his own people that he was leading. And what a testament to who Melian is, that he saw the trees of Valinor and decided this is better.
Right. Well, and I think it's noted he sees the light of Amon in her eyes, right? He sees that light from Valinor in her. And he's like, this is good for me. I don't need to go back. This mm-hmm. is what I wanted.
Well, I mean, yeah, she's, you know, she's of she is a holy being. And so this light in her eyes, that's, I don't know, it's kind of cool. I think it's enchanting. It's rather romantic. And I can get it because I certainly have been there in the past where that level of infatuation just causes everything else to drop away. And you're just, your whole being is focused on this one person. I don't know that, you know, yeah, certainly in younger days, I've experienced that. And so I can get that. I can get there.
You probably would call into work, though, right? I mean, it's...
yeah, but it would be a very short call, and I don't know that I would necessarily remember what I said to my boss or not.
Fair enough. So speaking of light in the eyes, this is the way we get the Sindar elves, and I think that's a super cool way to bring them into this, is that Thingol and Melian come out eventually. You know, they're like, hey guys, sorry about that, we're back. And, you know, the Teleri have largely moved on to Valinor under Olwë. But, so now we have this new thing where it is Amaya, who's, you know, obviously holy, and then you have an elf who is part of the Caliquendi, which just means elf who saw the light of the trees. And they are living amongst and leading this group of elves, this group of Teleri, who never saw the trees. So they would be part of the Moriquendi, and I guess they still are technically. The Moriquendi are the elves who didn't see the light. But they get sort of secondhand smoke from the light of the trees. You know, they get secondhand benefits here, where they get a little light in their eyes, kind of. And they are the gray elves, because they live amongst these holier beings. This is a really interesting concept that I don't think we see anywhere else in the Silmarillion or in any of Tolkien's Legendarium, of this sort of secondhand benefits of holiness.
Yeah. So I just have to, you know, stop and think about it. Yeah, it was something that I wasn't immediately, you know, didn't immediately hit me or wasn't clear to me for a while that there are the dark elves who never see the light of Valinor. There are the whatever they're called, the elves that do go over to Valinor, and then there are the gray elves that are just kind of in between. It just never occurred to me that the gray is literally in between white and black, you know, dark and light, and they're in that in between world where they're led by people who have seen the light of Valinor, and for them that's good, you know, that's good enough. They're trusting in that, and they believe that whatever they're going to create is going to be just as a wonderful place to live as it would be to travel another 1,000 leagues and then go across the sea, you know?
Right. And many of them end up sheltered in Doriath. They end up in a very protected environment. We'll get more into sort of the landscape of Doriath in a future chapter, but I think that's a big part of it, is that, you know, Melian really, you know, blessed these people. She really, you know, gave them her all, gave them a huge gift of protection, of light, and of guidance. And that is why they are the Sindar. It's not just, you know, looking in somebody's eyes. It's really this sort of kindness that she gives them, this gift from herself, from her being, giving up a part of herself to help these people that she fell in love with. The last point I wanted to make here is that, you know, we've talked about this a couple times, but the fairest of all the children come from this line. So we know Luthien comes from this line. And I just want to say there are a lot of comparisons we can make when we get to Beren and Luthien to this meeting of Thingol and Melian. And I think that Thingol is the biggest hypocrite in all of Beleriand. That's all I'm saying.
Shots fired. What's the
biggest hypocrite?
Okay, so bring it. What's your argument
here? It's the same thing. Uh-huh. It's the same exact thing. And he's just obtuse. Anyway, that's my complaint about Thingol. We'll have to wait till we get to Beren and Luthien.
Yeah, there's not much to say right now that won't go into future territory.
Okay.
But
all right.
Thingol does not be, I'll say this, Melian becomes one of my more respected characters. Thingol kind of has a fall from grace me.
just one?
It's more like a continuous fall. Each time he pops up, he goes a little further down.
Something I've learned about John while podcasting with him is that he suffers no fools. So if he's got a set against somebody, there is reason. There is a strong reason there.
Maybe. Or maybe I just didn't like Wanda Sykes in one role she had.
Well, I mean, you're bringing it to Bo-Katan. You're not giving Bo-Katan much room to...
Bo-Katan. Yeah. I had a song about Bo-Katan, Mary Clay, if you haven't heard our Mandalorian coverage. And it was not nice to her. Then I wrote another song that was nice to her because she got better throughout the season. So we're keeping it musical here on the Lorehounds podcast.
Oh, that's on brand for Melian. So there you go.
It is. There you go.
It's true. Well, why don't we take a quick break? And when we get back, we'll head into listener feedback.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
And we're back. Well, I think it's time for listener feedback. Mary Clay has graciously agreed to stick with us while we go through these comments. The first one is a weird one because it's from David.
It's from me.
Who's right here.
That's right. So I was talking with a professional colleague of mine, and we were talking about the Rivendell Lego set. And she was like, oh, yeah, my fiance and I, you know, we have this whole thing. And she started to explain to me this whole thing where they buy these big sets, and then that gets them some kind of Lego bucks points, kind of like airline miles. And then they use those, you know, points to buy smaller sets. But yeah, I actually know somebody who's going to be buying the Rivendell set.
Wow.
Which just blows me away. And of course,
did they win the lottery?
No, that's
I know, right?
That's what they do. Is they are together with no children. I forget. I know there's some acronym for that, but they are single. Right, or, you know, right. They're soon to be engaged.
Dink, right? Double income, no children.
Exactly. That's the one. So, they do that, and they buy these big sets, and then to tide them over between the big sets, they use their Lego bucks to buy these smaller, or whatever it's called. I don't know what it's called, Lego bucks or what it, the points. And then they buy smaller sets in between the big sets. So they space out their big set buying. So it's a big drop. It's a, you know, big vacation money kind of thing. And then they have plenty of Lego money to keep them busy until their next big purchase. So nice. I was kind of flabbergasted because I didn't realize that there's this whole culture of Lego economy. I mean, I grew up with Legos, obviously. I tortured my parents. You know, we were the first generation to make our parents walk barefoot across our Legos that we left in the living room.
Yes.
And we just had toy chests of them, of blocks, of shapes, of strips, of all kinds of things. And the formed sets were fewer and far or in between. And so we would just have to make up our own stuff, or we get very crude sets and then build up off of them. And that there is this whole culture now where people orient their lives to this really kind of, it didn't shake me, but I was just like, never realized that that existed. It's not a world I work in. So I, you know, more power to you, but like that somebody is actually buying a Rivendell set, it blows me away. It blows me away.
You know, I was just listening to a podcast where they were talking about the Lego Lord of the Rings video game.
Is that a hint at me?
It is.
Okay. Didn't you just drop an episode on that?
I was like, did you guys just... I was like, surely you put that point in knowing that I have been playing the Lego Lord of the Rings game. I'm playing the Lego video game that came out 12 years ago, about now. It's very enjoyable, but exactly like you said, there's this whole culture around Lego that I kind of am at a point now as a creator where I assume there is a community for everything.
Agreed. Yep.
But you don't necessarily realize how in-depth it is until you start dipping your toes. And that's exactly what I started doing, just trying to reach out to Lego creators. I was like, are there Lego creators for me to reach out to? And
sure enough.
Of course there are. Oh my gosh. Millions of subscribers on YouTube. I've messaged so many and none of them have messaged me back. And I'm like, can you just come on and talk about this Lego Lord of the Rings?
Well, if there's any Lorehounds listeners out there who are Lego stands, you know, jump over and give MC a conversation. Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a fun time because the video game has very funny, silly adaptations of the movie scenes. Boromir gets impaled with a banana and dies that way instead of with an arrow because you have to make it, you know, more PG.
Yeah. Right.
But yeah, it's fun. I've had some listeners show me their pictures and send me messages that they've got the Rivendell set and they're in the process of building it or posting a completed picture. Apparently when you open the box, there's 50 individual bags of the bricks.
Wow.
To sort through. So I tip my hat to anyone who... that is your thing,
yeah,
because you have more patience than I do.
John, you just did a Star Wars Lego build.
So I just did the Captain Rex. He becomes a commander at the end of the Clone Wars series.
Spoilers.
We don't need to talk about that, but
I'm joking.
Deal with it.
Yeah, exactly.
Deal with it. Captain Rex. They have a new line of 18 plus. Lego sets that are like the helmets of different figures. So they have one for Mando, you know, Din's helmet. They have Captain Rex. They have Commander Cody. They have, I think, a Leia helmet. I think it's a Legends helmet, actually. I think they're going for even like Legends type designs, and it's a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun making it. It was, they have a lot of like hinges so that you can really get like the curves of the helmet right. It's a good time. I'm having fun with Legos. I haven't built a Lego set since I was a kid until I got this one.
There you go.
So the next one is from our favorite Tolkien scholar, Marilyn R. Pakila, on the topic of armies of Balrogs. The number of Balrogs existing changed over time in Tolkien's conception. Early on, in the books of Lost Tales and in The Lost Road, Balrogs were less terrible and far more numerous. One reads about 1,000 of them standing, attending a battle. As the legendarium developed, Balrogs became far more formidable and fewer in number. By the time he was writing the material that Christopher put into Morgoth's Ring, Tolkien had made a little note to himself concerning Balrog, saying, "There should not be supposed." This is weirdly written. "There should not be supposed more than, say, 3 or at most 7 Balrogs ever existed. Hardly the stuff of armies, but consider the concept of 1,000 PowerPoints worth of Balrogs being condensed and contained in 3 to 7 of the creatures, and then you get a much better grasp on just how powerful they were. I think that Tolkien's answer to why God allows evil choices is free will. This goes back to good old Boethius, I don't know if I pronounced that right, and his notion that evil is an absence of good rather than a thing in and of itself. Evil is the result, in effect, of poor choices, which God chooses not to intervene in." Who's got thoughts on free will?
So these two topics came from our last Silmarillion stories, and Marilyn wrote in, because I think we got into the thing about Balrogs and the chaining of Melkor. Yes. So I thought that was interesting. It like a lot of things with Tolkien, he was seems like he was forever fiddling and tweaking and playing with it. Thousands of Balrogs would be pretty horrific, but bringing him down to a handful, I think, makes them more dangerous and more relatable. It's just like we just finished The Last of Us on HBO. And in this season, there wasn't an abundance of infected. And so whenever an infected was encountered, it was much more deadly and much more heart-pounding. Whereas, say, a show like The Walking Dead, where every episode has a big chunk of them, they sort of lose their edge and their the terror that they inflict. And so, obviously I don't know what Tolkien was working on and how he was processing his thoughts about how to manage his Balrogs. But I like this idea of keeping the numbers down a little bit so that when you do encounter them, so when we do encounter the one in the Mines of Moria, it's terrifying and it is potent and powerful, and all that kinetic energy just comes off the screen or comes off the pages and really, really grabs us.
Yeah. I mean, less is more with them,
yeah.
Right? I mean, imagine 1,000 Balrogs just running around Middle Earth. Nobody could have survived.
Exactly.
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
On the free will topic, Marilyn is always one to make us think about things, and sometimes it is too late at night for me to do that. So I'm going to toss it to Mary Clay. Do you think that free will...
I wish we could get your expression right then. That was great.
Do you think that evil is a result of free will?
I mean, that is quite a question, especially given a Catholic upbringing and going back to, Bible school lessons of, man's original sin beginning with the free will decision to eat an apple. I guess, Yeah, I'll say yeah. Because I think you have to have balance in the universe, I guess. And so if you're going to have this idea of free will is very a world without free will, I think to us maybe sounds insane. If you never lived in a world with free will, of course, you wouldn't know what your losing or what you don't have. But I think free will is a very beautiful thing about life. But the converse of that, you know, the flip side of the coin is that you can have the free will to do beautiful things and also terrible things. And so I guess, yes, free will is a consequence. I mean, evil is a consequence of free will.
Right. All right. I'm in.
Can I add like a giant question mark on the right. end of that and just leave it open-ended, you know?
Yeah. Ellipses. Put in ellipses there. That's
yes,
what we
dot, dot, dot. Yeah, yes,
that's what
exactly.
Gen X like to do.
We had a full discourse on our Patreon exclusive Second Breakfast episode this month about how Gen Xers and boomers use ellipses at the end of their sentences.
Oh my God.
And it makes millennials and Gen Zers think that they hate us. And it was a riveting conversation. I would recommend anyone check that out because I have been traumatized by ellipses and now you will too.
Yeah. Yes, and all this time.
I'm a copywriter and improper use of punctuation. Sometimes I'm like, you don't need to end an email with thank you, dot, dot, dot.
It sounds aggressive, I think.
I'm a notorious, you know, in casual writing, I'm a notorious user of ellipses. And so then John never said anything. So we're chatting on Discord all the time about business podcasting, blah, 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 blah. And for me, an ellipsis is open thought. It joins two, you know, thoughts that aren't fully formed or connected necessarily. And again, in casual writing. And so all this time he was having to gird himself and talk himself through the fact that, no, David doesn't hate me. He's still talking to me. He's like, he had to process his emotions and didn't tell me for months on end. So it was pretty hilarious telling of the tale when we finally did get around to it.
Well, you'll have to tune into Second Breakfast if you want more of that story. Yeah. For now, Lore Master Bettina W. on the Patreon app says, "Hey, John. Hey, David. I've just decided it's time for a rewatch of The Rings of Power. And
wow.
To get into the right mood, I went back to your Second Age lore episodes. I am very deeply steeped in the lore of Tolkien's work, but I still enjoy listening to somebody breaking it down for casual fans. And boy, John, you did an awesome job there. I still can't get over the fact that your first Silmarillion read was only a few years ago. And David, from what I got, you're the casual reader and hearing most of the deeper lore for the first time. But you seem to have a really good grasp on Tolkien. Can't wait to hear you getting deeper into First Age stuff and talking about it. Really enjoyed your Second Age coverage and enjoying your current Silmarillion stories. I do hope, though, that you'll be breaking up some of the upcoming chapters into more episodes, especially the three core stories. Finally, David, in one of the more recent episodes, I heard you dreading to go back and listen to your earlier episodes again. Don't worry, they are very good. Keep up the good work, and I'm loving March for the amount of content we're getting from you." Well, what a lovely email. So thank you so much, Bettina W., and thank you for being a lore master, because these guys keep us going.
It's nice to know that we didn't whiff it too badly on our first podcast back then. And so, on such a important, you know, such a set of topics that for a lot of people hold a lot of meaning and a lot of there's a lot of intensity, emotional and intellectual intensity around that stuff. And I'm glad that we did a good job. So it makes me feel better.
Right. But comparatively, the Tolkien fandom is a lovely, lovely fandom that I am grateful for all the time when we talk about Tolkien, because even when we get something wrong, the corrections are very light touch they're very helpful rather than hurtful.
Yeah.
And I've always appreciated
people
that.
Aren't too shouty.
Sure. Yeah. Breaking down the chapters into other episodes, there's something. I think we are definitely going to break down Beren and Lúthien into two episodes. I'm not sure. The big three are, by the way, David.
Yes.
I was wondering. Number three.
I'm thinking, this is what I think that Bettina means, is the three great tales that were published separately. So Beren and Lúthien, The Fall of Gondolin, and The Children of Húrin. And I think that's what she means, but I could be wrong. But I definitely Beren and Lúthien. The Fall of Gondolin is a really short tale in the Silmarillion that's really expanded in that standalone book, so I think we'll probably leave that as the same. Children of Húrin, that is a long one. We might do that in two. Haven't decided yet, but I know that Marilyn Arpukila, over a year in advance, has claimed that, so right. She will be on to discuss the Children of Húrin.
Yeah, I don't know if y'all are going to read that. Are you reading the actual full Children of Húrin or just
we're gonna sticking do to the Silmarillion chapter?
Yeah, I remember. Yep. I had to split up of Turin Turambar into two episodes, and I think both episodes were like an hour and a half long. So
yeah,
it's a hefty one.
Yep.
Oh, that's another dark tale of love.
Yes. Yes. David
and
doesn't
I'll leave
know
it
yet.
At that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's a real bad one. Okay. Loremaster Brian 8063 via Patreon says, I just wanted to thank you for the elf flowchart. This is so helpful. John, interesting point about the Valar having hazy memories of the song. It made me wonder if they could not recall those memories. If so, are the Valar imperfect beings? Then this leads me to a larger Tolkien question. Does perfection play a role in Tolkien's world? Oof. Oof. I'm going to just answer right off the bat. No, the Valar are not perfect beings. They are imperfect beings. They are not God. God is Eru Iluvatar. These are the angels, and they can do wrong, and they do wrong. And I've been staking the case against Manwë this entire read-through.
Oh,
I think
my
he's
gosh.
A terrible leader.
Praise. Amen.
Go on, Mary Clay. What do you have to say?
Yeah,
about this?
I mean, I just found it as you continue reading the Silmarillion and reading these tales that unfold, a lot of the times you're like, where the heck are these powerful, all knowing gods, demigods?
Where are the grown ups?
That live on this earth that, you know, all these years ago, Iluvatar has this vision and about, you know, God's perfect children coming to earth being the elves and the men. And why does no one care about us anymore now that we're in the midst of strife? Where are our right. gods that were supposed to be here to keep us safe?
Yes, I would agree. And Manwë tends to encourage action when it's the wrong idea and discourage action when it's the wrong idea. And I don't know why, but maybe we'll find out one day. Friend of the pod, E. Hoop, says, regarding the Christopher Tolkien reading, I can't find the version that starts in darkening and sort of think maybe the dark hand of the Tolkien lawyers is scrubbing it from YouTube. I really feel like I remember more of from my CDs and LPs, and darkening is in the title. In my defense, still a glorious reading. So this is a follow-up on feedback from last month where E-Hoop turned us on to a recording of Christopher Tolkien reading of the Darkening of Valinor, and I believe the next chapter from there, portions of it at least, that was on YouTube. Unfortunately, apparently, it's missing parts of it at least, because the Tolkien estate is, as E-Hoop is pointing out, the Dark Hand. It will come and take the things that you want if they are not properly licensed.
Yes, yeah. As someone who has spent a good deal of their time as a podcaster looking for increasingly obscure things on the internet, I recommend looking on the Internet Archive. Maybe
okay.
poke around yeah. in there. There might be, I think it's just archive.org. and I'm pretty sure it's free to make an account, and you can find all sorts of stuff on there. Not sure if you'll be able to find what you're looking for, but that's another place to look that perhaps someone has uploaded it to preserve it there. But if it's the Tolkien estate doing their deeds, their hand is far reaching.
right. They'll find it even if it's hidden with the ring. Mary Clay, can you tell our listeners where to find you and what you're working on briefly? I know we've discussed before, but tell them a little more.
Yeah, you can listen to That's What I'm Tolkien About wherever you get podcasts. There are new episodes every Tuesday. You can follow on social media at Tolkien About Pod. And currently, I am covering the Lego Lord of the Rings video game. It's very fun. It's very silly. You never You don't have to have played the game to enjoy the episodes. And then coming up, I will be doing some special topic episodes. And the first one coming up will be an episode just about the women of Lord of the Rings / Tolkien. I had to open it up to the Silmarillion, because just doing the women of Lord of the Rings gets a little bit limiting.
Right.
So
that sounds good.
That's what I'm working on now. There are things to be found on the podcast if you are a intense fan who has read every word of Tolkien, and there are things to be found if you have just started watching Fellowship of the Ring.
Well, this has been
very cool.
Yeah, thanks for coming over. It was like I said, we had a good time when we came over to you, and we're so glad that you decided to jump over.
Yes,
with us.
Go listen to the episode that y'all were on. I think it was for one of the appendices.
It was appendices.
Yeah, Appendix A. We did The Tale of Aragorn and Arwen,
which was great.
And I think we did Aorl as
Aorl.
Well.
Yes, I remember that. Very hard to say.
We had some good banter. I believe we had the Law & Order SVU theme play a few times.
We did,
for some reason.
Very cool.
Yes.
We had a good time.
Yeah, just like we said, Tolkien writing in all those older woman romances. Sometimes it can feel a little bit fishy when you have a 20-year-old talking to a 20,000-year-old.
Yep.
Or sorry, I think she's just 2,000, so never mind.
Is it too much of a difference for this purpose? I don't think so.
I know, yeah. What's another 18,000 years?
Yeah. So we're going to throw your socials and your link to your feed in the show notes. So if people want to check you out, please do. And thank you so much for being here, Mary Clay. And we hope to talk to you soon.
Yes, thanks so much for having me. This was so much fun.
Thanks again.
Okay, David, let's talk programming notes and Patreon shout outs. First of all, let's thank our patrons. We've got three tiers on our Patreon. We've got a $10 tier as our top tier, and those are called our Lore Masters. They are the people who keep this show running, who keep the Lore Hounds machine going down the highway and making Tolkien scared because it's not nature.
You're really stretching on this one, but go for it.
We do try to stretch things out, and we will have to start stretching this podcast out because we have 21 Lore Masters now, and here's the list. Samartian, Cyrus, Mark H., Michael G., Michelle E., David W., Brian P., Nick W., SC, Peter OH, Bettina W., Adam S., Nancy M., Lavinia T., Duve 71, Brian 8063, Frederick H., Sarah L., Gareth C., Eric F. and Matthew M. Wow, that list is getting long, and I'm loving it.
Very cool. And hopefully it's going to get longer, because we're coming up on our one-year anniversary, and we've set ourselves out a little goal, and that is we'd love to achieve having 100 patrons by the end of the month of July, in just a few months. Our first ever podcast dropped July 11th, I believe it was, and we thought it would be fun to see if we could get 100 folks to be subscribers by the end of the month. And to do that, one of the things that we're going to do is we're going to have a little giveaway for everyone. So everyone who's still subscribed by the end of the month, we're going to send you something fun and cool. We're designing it right now. I don't want to tip anything just because we're still working out all the details, but Patreon subscription is really the best way to support us. It is the most stable form of revenue for us. There are real costs involved in running a podcast. Ad revenue can be fickle. It's great. It really does help us a lot. But Patreon subscribers really are the bread and butter of our work. And you get to do a lot of cool things. You get to listen to our podcast, our exclusive podcast, Second Breakfast. We have lots of polls. We have a private area on our Discord where folks can talk. So lots of benefits. Most importantly, you get to help keep being part of producing this great content.
Yes, thank you so much to all of our patrons. You really are keeping this operation moving. So let's tell everyone what we're doing next, what the Lore Masters are helping us do. We've got more Ted Lasso coming. We just wrapped up the Mandalorian Season 3. We had a special guest, Alicia, who helped us wrap up that season and talk all things Star Wars.
That was a fun podcast. Yeah,
it was a fun podcast.
Yeah, it was a fun season, too.
It's like 2.5 hours. So
that's right. If you want Lore Hounds content, go check that episode out.
Yeah, we got it for you.
Yeah.
We've also got an episode of the MC Universe coming out at the end of the month to prep you for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Alicia will be on that one as well. And Jean, of course, was on it, as he is every episode of MC Universe.
All right, so we've got two quick final announcements. The first is we ran a little Patreon poll to have our patron subscribers help us pick the next couple of shows that we're covering. We're in a little in-between zone, and there's no big tentpole shows that we absolutely have to cover. And so there's a whole bunch of three or four little shows that, or not little shows, but you know, sort of medium-sized shows. And our patrons have chosen Barry, which is running right now, the first two episodes. I believe the first three episodes will have been out by the time we get this out. Yep. And so we're going to pick up coverage for that. And then starting May 1st is going to be The White House Plumbers on HBO. And that should be fun. That's all about Nixon and the break-in to the Watergate offices of the Democratic National Convention. And all
we love a crooked king.
We do, and it's all the hilarity that ensues from that. So once we have those schedules in operation, you'll be hearing more about those. Lastly, we have a very special event that we're just starting to announce, and that is on May the 6th. We are going to be watching the original 1977 Star Wars film, A New Hope. We're going to be hosting that on our Discord. We're still working out the schedule for that, but expect sometime in the evening of Saturday, May the 6th, Eastern Time. You'll be able to come onto our Discord. We'll be live streaming the movie. We're not going to record this so that we don't get in trouble, but we are going to live stream the movie. We're going to be chatting about it in text, and then John and I will probably be on what's called the Discord stage feature, which allows us to do, you know, voice conversations. So before and after talking about the movie and our history with it, and then while we're watching it, everybody will be able to talk in the chat feature as we're watching it. And this is going to kick off our plan to watch all 9 of the Star Wars movies this year and podcast about all of those. We're in a great place with Star Wars right now, and folks have been asking if we might do this, and so I think we've decided that we will. As the Star Wars world, there's a lot going on, and I think it would be a lot of fun and interesting context for us to go back and watch all of the core 9 movies to really build some more context for all of the shows that we're watching. So, 2 big announcements. Drop in to our Discord on May the 6th, and we'll have some more information once we get those schedules hammered down. And Barry and the White House Plumbers. Look forward for those episodes.
Very cool. Well, I hope everyone will join us next month for another episode of Silmarillion Stories. We're going to be talking about Of Eldamar and the Princes of the Edalier. That should be a great read. It's not a lot of story, but it's something to talk about. And I think we're going to have a special guest as well. So stay tuned for more details on that. We'll discuss that on other podcasts. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next month. The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.
Hey, Mark, I was listening to Paramore the other day, and it really made me think about the amygdala and the limbic system.
You just made those words up, didn't you?
What, Paramore?
We're the Nevermind the Music podcast, where one musician
and one psychologist
talk songwriting and the mind, one song at a time.
We'll hear everything from Green Day and Outkast
to Stevie Wonder and Dua Lipa.
And we mostly try to stay on topic.
Except for when we don't want to.
Nevermind the Music, wherever you get your podcasts.